Welcome everyone to the Speak Truth Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Blake Gideon, and I've got a good friend here with me today. This is Jacob McDougall, and Jacob and I have been friends for years.
Yeah.
But he's also, he allows me to be his pastor, and I get the privilege of pastoring Jacob and his family. And so, Jacob, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you for having me. Greatly appreciate it. And not just my pastor and my friend, but I do believe that God designed that our family would come to this church. Mm. And we're grateful for that, and we're grateful for you.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate that very much. Well, you let's just talk about why we're here today. All right. So, Jacob has recently written a novel, and I've had the blessing of reading it.
Yes.
And a very impactful story, and so we want to talk about a little bit about that story today without going into a whole lot of detail, because we want them to read the story.
Exactly.
But why don't we just start off with, here's what we can do. Why don't you tell us the name of the novel, mm-hmm. and then tell us a little bit about yourself, mm-hmm. and then we'll get into why the nuts and bolts of...
You know, sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So I am actually Senior Director of Healthcare Administration at OSU Medicine. That's my day job.
Yeah.
I'm even pursuing a doctorate in healthcare administration. So this has all been happening while trying to write a novel over the last couple of years. So it's been quite the task to handle that, life transitions post-COVID. And what really spurred this on, quite frankly, was in 2021, post-COVID, my father passed away with cancer. Mm-hmm. And we have had a long history, him and I, over my creative spirits, and he came around to bless my creative spirit. And so as he was passing away, he said, Jacob, life is short, and I think it's really important that you pursue this dream of yours. And so literally probably 6 weeks after he passed away, which is coming up on October 10th, anniversary of his life, I was mowing the yard and the story came to me. Mm. And by the time I finished the front yard, I had a thought that was designed by God that was a child abduction story. Mm-hmm. And by the time I finished mowing the backyard, I had the entire story outlined all the way through the recovery of the young child. And first thing I did is called a friend of mine who's an FBI agent, and I said, hey, I've got this story, and I'd like to run it by you. And I did, and he was so gracious to listen to it. And he said, Jacob, sounds like a great story, but that's what it is, a story. He says, it's not real. He says, if you're going to write a story about child sex trafficking and the grooming process that happens online, write the real story, write a raw, authentic, and honest story. And so he and I continued to collaborate and have conversations, and that was the birth of Whispers Among the Blossoms.
Whispers Among the Blossoms.
Yep. And so one interesting story that happened through the course of talking with him was, I'd done a lot of research of various kind of human trafficking cases, child sex trafficking cases all across the United States. And
well, let me just ask you something right quick. Yeah. before you tease that thought out further. Why human trafficking, sex trafficking?
It's definitely a heavy subject. So
yeah, because what even got you to researching that? And
yeah, great question. So you know our twins, right?
Yeah.
They're 13-year-old twins here at the church. And when my daughter was 5 years old in California where we live, it was a Friday night at a county fair, and it was very crowded, very dark. And my daughter and my wife went to the restroom, and while they were in there, a woman tried to abduct my 5-year-old daughter out of the restroom.
Oh, my goodness.
And gratefully, my wife was able to intervene at the very last moment before the lady could get her outside. And then when my wife went outside, she had noticed that there were two men standing outside the restroom with that woman. And they were obviously on the lookout for a vulnerable person that they could take. And so that was the kind of precipice for an idea that happened, you know, 8 years ago that I didn't even realize would become Whispers Among the Blossoms.
Yeah.
But this friend of mine, the FBI agent, while we were living in California, he had talked to us about the Central Valley of California and the gangs and the cartels.
Right.
And he really pleaded for us to leave California. And it just so happened that my father was getting sick at that time. And so we made the decision. And we say God helped us leave.
Yeah.
Because we left 3 months before COVID. And so that was a long story of just kind of how the idea of just child trafficking, human trafficking, was placed on my heart from that experience 8 years ago. And then honestly, when I was mowing the yard and this thought came to me, I knew I wanted to write. I knew I wanted to sit down and write a novel, but I didn't know what to write about. And I do believe that God put this story on my heart. And I will say that the first words I wrote, which was ultimately the first chapter I wrote it in about 20 minutes, and it was about 8.5 pages long. And you talked about this in Emmaus Road, where you know the authors of the Bible are godly inspired authors, right?
Yeah, right.
When I wrote this first chapter, it was a graphic chapter, and my hand was moving and just writing, and I was unconscious, stream of consciousness as I was writing it. And when I finished the chapter, I put the pencil down and I took a step back, and I had these emotions and I was shaking, and I felt just something had come over me to write this. And so I knew from the very first chapter and words that it was a divinely inspired work. I didn't exactly know where it was going
to
go.
And just for theological safety, not to the level of divinely inspired.
Just for the Bible.
Just for my listening audience.
No.
We'll have some with critical ears. And so, yes, God moved you to write this.
God moved me in that moment to write those words. I don't even know that they were my words at the moment. They were just inspired to be written.
Yeah.
Now, what was interesting, I thought that was going to be the first chapter of the book. That ended up being like chapter 42 of the book. But that's how the idea came to be. And now here we are a year and a half later after starting it, and we are completed.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your research. And
So that was, I researched a lot of criminal court cases.
Okay.
Looking at different affidavits, research warrants, really trying to be as authentic as I could possibly be around, the police side of the story, the tactical operation side of the story. And so I'd come across one particular case in the Central Valley of California that was a pretty high-level seizure of narcotics, weapons, guns, cash, and they arrested, I want to say, close to 30 people during this apprehension. And so that kind of took me down a road of, okay, thinking through if the FBI were really pursuing a criminal cartel, I wanted to be authentic to that. And those cases really helped me kind of craft that side of it.
Yeah.
But the one in particular that I think is the most interesting, I ran across a case, and I want to be very careful not to use real names, but it inspired the story inside the novel, where a young woman had been abducted and trafficked, and she, based on the story that I recall, one late night she called the FBI hotline and asked to be rescued. And she gave the location of the motel she was in, and the FBI and law enforcement showed up, and they recovered her. And I was pretty excited about this particular story and case, and because I knew it kind of fit well with the story that I was writing. And I went to my friend who's the FBI agent and I said, man, you'll never guess this case. It's amazing what happened with this young girl and how she got abducted and recovered. And he said, oh, you're talking about Katie. And I'll just use the name Katie. But he says, oh, you're talking about Katie. And I stopped and I said, what are you talking about? He said, I'm the one who recovered her.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that, and this was something that really shocked me, and I had to include it in the story. When he recovered her, she was so distraught and grateful to be recovered. But then when they apprehended the cartel members that had trafficked her, my friend, the agent, went to interview her on the side. And when she saw the cartel members, she spat in his face as a sign to show allegiance to her captors.
Mm.
And he just encouraged me to understand that, you know, I think in the beginning when I started the story, I was thinking of my children. I mean, what would happen if my children were abducted? What would that be like? And he just encouraged me to understand that most of the children who are abducted are not like my children. And thank God for that. They are vulnerable. They're weak in terms of their environment that they come from.
No parental supervision.
No parental supervision. Yeah,
total freedom to the internet.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And so he said, and the scary thing is that for a lot of these young women, the environment they're in after they're trafficked can sometimes be better than the environment that they came from.
Mm.
That has something that never crossed my mind.
That is a very thought provoking, but also, I mean, it just rips me, when I hear that statement, it gets me in my gut. Is guess what I'm trying to say? Very sobering.
It's very sobering.
To think that your life. I mean, say that again.
So many of the young women, and we say young girls, but it's also even young boys.
Yeah.
And many of the young girls and the young boys, the environment that they're in when they're trafficked can be a better environment than the environment where they came from.
Yeah.
And I think with the story, you'll learn early on, starts with Lily Grace, who's the character, who's the teenage girl.
Yeah.
And it starts off with a scene where it's her 15th birthday, and she is raped by her stepfather on her 15th birthday, and it's not the first time.
Yeah.
And that is what kind of sends her into an environment where she seeks refuge online, and she withdraws from her normal friends and family, and she becomes essentially, without knowing it, she becomes a victim.
Well, what I noticed, you know, when I was reading was because of her abuse, and she goes online and she's trying to find some other people who can understand her pain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a predator online waiting for that person who's looking for some help, who's looking for some understanding, and the predator is there online waiting.
Yes, and...
and the predator being someone that you never would
have... would never have guessed. And, you know, again, my friend is an FBI agent. Part of his job was jumping fences and apprehending gang members. But the other part of his job, which was the more challenging part of his job, was being online, pretending to be a child to try and catch these predators.
Yep.
And I thought it was very important in this novel to describe the grooming process.
And I just want to stop you right there, because that's one of the things I told you, that it was hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several places in there that's hard to read, but they need to be read.
Yeah.
And that's coming from a pastor, right? They need to be read. And that was so so eye-opening to me, just to catch a glimpse of the grooming process.
Yeah.
that takes place so deceptive and so evil. And so I hate the act of it, but I'm glad that provide it in the novel, because it helps us to know what to look for. And and
it can happen so easily, right? Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a child who comes from a poor family,
yeah,
or maybe that's a child that's lost in the foster adoption system. Mm-hmm. It can happen to your children,
yeah,
right? Especially with the gaming systems. And I know I listen to my children upstairs playing their video games, and they're in their community chat rooms. And I think the way the novel describes the process of the predator reaching out and identifying with this young lady,
yeah,
and building a relationship, a friendship with her, a friendship that she never in her wildest imagination would have thought that it would have been of anything that would have had evil intentions.
Yep.
And she proficiently and expertly grooms this young girl to get her to the point where she slowly crosses the line that she doesn't even see.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important in this novel, and I think this is one of the parts of the novel that I really want to get out to just audiences, is if you have children, really be aware of who they're communicating with online, because you may, and they may think that they're talking to another 13-year-old person.
Right.
It may not be. Yeah. And with technology now on the internet, it may not even be a female or a male that they're communicating mm-hmm. with, because of voice deceptors and other tools that they have at their disposal. And so it's just, it's a scary world that we're living in today. And I think this story in particular is, the more we have these conversations, the more yeah. we talk about it, the more that it becomes normal that you can ask these questions
yeah.
with your children.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So your novel sheds lights on the realities faced by, victims of sex trafficking. What message or awareness do you hope readers, will take away from your work?
Yeah. So I've obviously read and reread this novel about 1,000 times. There's many different themes in this novel that I think that I want to get out to reading audiences, and different parts of the book are going to kind of
engage people
in a different way. Yeah. For example, the child sex trafficking and the grooming and the gang and cartel aspect of the story, that's one aspect of the right. story. I would venture to say, while that is the vehicle for the story, that's not the true essence of the story. The essence of the story is really about hope, faith, God's redemptive love, and seeking God.
Yeah.
And the power of seeking God. And it's done also in the area of kind of marriage ministry. That was something that was very important to my wife. At the past churches that we've been a part of, we've been marriage ministry mm-hmm. leaders. And so that's a big theme of this novel, because the FBI agent, J.B. Phillips, he's a former Marine Special Forces who has transitioned from the Marines to the FBI. Mm-hmm. He's seen some very horrible evil in his career. As a Marine Special Forces member, but also even as an FBI agent. And so he's having a really hard time blending the personal and professional yeah. life. And this is something that is a lot of novels, a lot of movies, a lot of stories. They depict the police officer that struggles with alcohol or, is a broken down person. And I didn't want to do that. Like, I want J.B. Phillips, the FBI agent, to be a strong, manly character, mm-hmm. but an individual who's vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right? And an individual who has faith, but perhaps has lost the faith, and he's married to a woman of faith.
Yeah.
Who's really his grounding rock and has been. Unfortunately, that duality of good and evil in his professional life separated him from his wife, and they're on the verge, on the cusp of wondering whether or not they can continue on as a married couple.
Right.
And that story has coincided with, I think, is a great female character in his wife, Hannah Phillips, who gets a diagnosis for ovarian cancer. And then through the process of that, learns that she's going to be infertile.
Right.
And so she goes on her own faith journey through that process. And she goes through a state of depression. And that even further withdraws those two and their marital relationship. And to me, that's one of the stories that I really want to get out there is relying on faith in your marriage, relying on God in your marriage, and relying on strong church mentors. Hannah Phillips, the wife of the FBI agent, while she goes through the state of depression, she finds an elder female within the church who's really helps walk alongside her and help bring her out of that state of depression. I think that's a part of the story that I think is really important for reading audiences to know that whether you're dealing with a cancer diagnosis, whether you're dealing with infertility, or some other setback in your life, you can't do it alone.
Right.
And find those mentors that can help walk alongside you, I think is so critical. And that's something I want to get out as part of a message of this story.
Yeah. I tell you, another thing, when I was, reading Lily Grace's story, and I started reading at the beginning, because I'm an avid reader, I started predicting in my mind where you were going. And you totally didn't go there. And so I appreciated that, because it was almost like, when you're watching a movie and you think you know what's going to happen, and then all of a sudden, something else happens. And what I thought was going to be predictable wasn't. And I think that actually added to the story. And the power of the story.
Yeah, and I think also I didn't want to write a novel that was your typical kind of crime thriller. Again.
Or everything is bad, and now let's look at all the roses and all the...
Yeah.
You were honest and raw throughout the whole thing, and especially in telling Lily Grace's story.
Yeah, Lily Grace's story certainly, I really... One of the hardest things about this story in terms of writing it and understanding it as an author was understanding who the protagonist is.
Mm.
I think when I first started writing the novel, Lily Grace was the protagonist. She was the main character. And that was probably that way even through the completion of the novel.
Mm-hmm.
Then as I went through the rewrite process, I found that the protagonist, the main character, was J.B. Phillips. Mm. And Lily Grace was that kind of secondary character. While her story may have driven the plot, J.B. is the main character.
Yeah.
He's the protagonist. And so I think weaving in the variety of the storylines, I think when I look back on the novel, I think that's what readers will... And this is what some of my early adopters, my early readers have shared is, anytime you read a novel, there are certain points where you get a little bored or you want to slow down or skip to different. I think this story provides so many different storylines that it engages you throughout the entire novel. I will say one of my favorite characters to write, and this one came out of the blue. Like... I didn't really outline every single chapter. I kind of let the story take me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was almost like a reader writing the story.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of authors like to outline every single chapter. That's not exactly how I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is the one character who was going to have just a very small part. His name was Eric Avena.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of the gang leaders.
Yeah.
And I think... I kind of fell in love with this character, if you will. And, throughout my life, I've probably crossed paths with some people who society wouldn't say are moral upstanding figures in society. And I've always kind of thought I will treat an individual the way they treat me, and how they treat me is important. And so Eric, while he was a gang leader, head of this group, and he was responsible for a lot of evil, there was a lot of good in him. Now there's another individual, Paco Ramirez, very little good in that individual. Yeah. But Eric, I kind of identified with.
Yeah.
I identified with being in a position in life that you don't want to be in, but you feel there's no other choice. And I felt like he was trapped in the role of cartel leader, gang leader. And he was seeking a way out, but just couldn't figure out how to do it. And I thought that character to me, I tried to find ways to make that character almost turn good and become a confidant of JB's, but I thought that was a bridge too far and that would make it unrealistic.
Yeah.
And, but he was one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting for me to hear you say that. So, all right, so you know, the novel definitely does humanize perpetrators of sex trafficking, and I'm sure that was your intention, right?
You know, that's the part, as I'm going to do more media hopefully for this novel as it gets ready to go to production and print, that's one of the things that I'm more curious how readers are going to respond. I definitely tried to humanize the predator.
Yeah,
I wanted to understand why they are the way they are.
Yeah.
What was it from their environment, from their experiences in life, that put them in a position that they felt compelled to do this to others? Because if we're all God's children, man.
Yeah.
But I know that there's going to be victims of this.
You know what really, when I was reading where I really saw that, and people are going to see it different.
Yeah.
But for me, when I saw, I don't know if you want me to say the perpetrator's name or not.
You can say the perpetrator's
Jade.
Name.
Jade. Yeah. Okay.
Jade, yeah.
Yeah. So Jade, when, you know, and she deceives Lily Grace. And then when they're in the home, after she travels and she's in California and she's in the home and at the party, and somebody walks up and gives Jade $500, and then Jade and that person grabs Lily Grace and takes her, and Jade, at that point, her focus is not on Lily Grace anymore. All this person she said that she was going to befriend, and her focus is sitting there flipping through that money, counting that money, as she's being drugged back to a bedroom. And I thought, that right there shows, just in that moment, I saw just the evil in the heart. And just in that, you know, just in that little...
Yeah, and so as the story continues, and again, I don't want to give away everything. I want to give away bits and pieces to it to entice readers, but so you caught on to something that was intentional.
Okay.
And it happens at multiple times of the story where Jade is a contradiction. And she is struggling, in my opinion, she is struggling with the good and evil in her own heart. And at multiple points of the story, she goes from being this confidant to Lily Grace, this friend that has shared many nights of commissary, of shared experiences, to just being the most evil person that only cares about their business, which is the business of prostitution. And that juxtaposition of good and evil and how it weaves through Jade's character all the way to the very end of the story.
Yeah.
When Jade is confronted and she's given a moment to kind of turn mm-hmm. and walk towards light, yeah. if you will, and she refuses.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's a powerful kind of flaw in humans to turn and walk away. But I am concerned on some level with how reading audiences, especially readers who have had family members or themselves who have been victims, how they'll respond to that juxtaposition of good and evil within a predator. But as an author, I think it's important to try and understand all my characters, antagonist and protagonist. Yeah. And I think it just makes a more enriched character if you see the good and the evil, even if they're a bad person.
Yeah. Well, I think it adds to the authenticity and the, you know, because that's the way people are by nature. You're going to see them do, you know, people can, even people who are involved in, you know, human trafficking, I'm talking about the perpetrators, you may see them do something good.
Yeah.
You know, but there's something altogether different that's happening in the dark. And I think that you portray that pretty well in the book. Now, let me, as your pastor, I can remember you coming to me early on and you were asking me about, Pastor, I'm struggling with about how, you know, how blunt or how raw or how detailed I need to be in this book. And I gave you my advice on that. But let me ask you a question. Did you talk about the challenges or the concerns about writing a novel such as this? I mean, you're talking about sex trafficking. There's victims. I mean, you're so.
Yeah. So there's an author that has written similar content. And they're a Christian author. And they were in an interview talking about the balance of how graphic can you be with a Christian message. Mm. And in entertainment, and I think you're seeing it really come to light in the last couple of years, whether it's movies, books, whatever. I think when you got labeled with Christian entertainment, whether it was books, movies, it seemed like the quality lessened, the quality of the work, the movie, whether it's less quality actors, production value, whatever it might be. And I always thought to myself, until the quality of the work matches quote unquote mainstream quality, reading audiences at large beyond the Christian audience probably isn't going to read it. And so I thought in writing this novel, while I want it to be a message of faith, I want it to be raw, authentic, and high quality so that maybe if a reader was not a Christian and they read it, they would find entertainment value and they might find inspiration to learn more about faith and how faith impacts their life.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, one of my favorite authors is John Grisham. And I reread multiple times his A Time to Kill series with the character Jake Brigance. And if you read A Time to Kill by John Grisham and you go back to the very beginning of the book, and if you remember the movie, you remember the scene with Kiefer Sutherland, the actor, being the kind of Ku Klux Klan member who takes the young black girl in the back of the pickup truck and they tie her up to a tree and they throw rocks and beer cans at her and they eventually, you know, have their way with her before they dump her over the side of a bridge.
Mm.
And I thought back, because when I think back on like John Grisham's movies and his books, I forgot how graphic those first 15 to 20 pages were. And so then when I was writing mine, I was like, I wanted to be graphic so people understood the reality and the harrowing kind of subject matter. But I was really worried pastors, Christians would think that it was too much.
I leaned back in my chair on one issue.
He says one issue, I get really nervous. Just saying. Because I'm like, man, what did I just say?
No. It was when I was reading and I was like, okay. No, I mean, you were portraying the character in what he said.
Yeah.
And I'm just messing with
you. I think I've had a few early adopter readers, and they're female,
mm-hmm.
read the novel, and they have told me how powerful it is,
yeah.
and that they really enjoyed it, but they said that they had to skip over a few pages here and there where it got graphic.
Okay, so let me speak to that. I'm a man, so mm-hmm. I know I just interrupted you, and I'm back.
No, you're good.
It's my podcast. All right, so... we're friends. You know, that is a temptation when you're reading it to skip over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you why I didn't. The reason I didn't skip over it is because even though it's a novel and it's based upon a fictional character, it's a real life issue.
Yeah. That's why we wrote it.
And it's a real life issue. It's happening right now. I mean, it's a real life issue. And people are ignoring it. And they're acting like it doesn't happen. And they're thinking it's never going to happen to me or to my kids. And so the reason I read every word of every page and didn't skip is because there are people right now who are victims. They are in human trafficking, and we need to know what's going on so that we can speak better to this issue and to be a voice for.
Think about this. When you're traveling, because I think a lot of people think, well, it doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen to anybody I know. They think it doesn't happen in Oklahoma. It happens in California, New York, Texas. Go on I-35,
yeah.
Okay? Go out to the truck stops.
Yeah.
Look, and I don't know if people pay attention to this or not, but if you go towards the restrooms and the truck stops, they have flyers on the door saying, do not leave your children unattended.
Wow.
Now, I had never really thought about it or looked at that. But then as I started writing this novel and we started traveling across country and going to different truck stops, it is a real issue.
Mm.
And here's the scary thing, I think, is why it's also important is not just understanding the signs of grooming, which is critically important, understanding kind of just the subject matter in general, but it's also, I think, paying attention to when you're out.
Yes.
What doesn't look right?
That's good.
Because you could be at a truck stop or a rest stop. You could be at a grocery store here in Edmond, and you could see a man or a woman with a child, and something doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because this isn't really a subject matter that's discussed, a lot of us just look the other way when we see something that may not look right. And I pray that we can all get to the point where when we see something that doesn't look right, we say something. Because it could be some person's life or death.
That's right.
Opportunity.
That's right. Well, and I think if people will, you know, buy this book and they'll read it, they're going to see how real that really is and how important that statement is. We got to be educated. We got to know what's going on. And you know, another key theme in the novel is, and I know in this podcast I've spoken more about, you know, the human trafficking, the sex trafficking side only, because I'd like to grab somebody around the neck, you know what I'm saying, and squeeze them. Okay. But also, and you mentioned this earlier, there is a beautiful story of God's redeeming love and adoption and marital faithfulness through difficulty and through hardship. And I mean, just, you know, so you have the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just for the reading audience out there, on the, you know, you got to be careful, right? Because, you know, my wife, she's going to be like, what are you going to say on this podcast, right? Yeah. So I'm going to paraphrase this as succinctly as I can. But, you know, we dealt with infertility early in our lives as married couples. And, you know, when you're late 20s, early 30s, you don't think that's ever going to be a problem until it becomes a problem.
Until it does, yeah.
And, you know, I watched, there's a scene in there where J.B. Phillips has to stab his wife with a needle for the infertility injections. And I wanted to make levity of that because I remember doing that for my wife. And I remember my hand shaking.
Yeah, I was wondering how much of, is there some of Jacob and JB?
There's some of Jacob in every single one of these characters, the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is I think this FBI agent in real life has shared a lot of similar things with this character. And he's going to read it and he's going to say, wow, you wrote about that. And I'm going to say, yeah, but not you. That's me. I wrote about me, not you.
Yeah.
And the infertility portion of that is really about us. And I remember my hand trembling as I got this, like, long needle, and it's thick gauge, and I got to stick it in the back of her hip. And I go to stick her, and I can't do it, and I kind of leave it half in, half out, dangling. And she grabs it and says, no, you got to do it like this, and sticks it in herself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, that's the last one I'm ever doing.
Yeah, women are way tougher than men.
That's the last one I'm ever doing.
Yeah.
And but I think talking through, you know, just remembering those moments of our lives and thinking about my wife and how she felt less of a woman for not being able to conceive. And our situation happened to be both of us. While she's feeling like less of a woman, I'm feeling like less of a man.
Yeah.
So then we both kind of go into our separate rooms going pity party over ourselves.
Mm.
But yet I know we're both thinking that what's the other person thinking?
Yeah.
And that process for us lasted 5 or 6 years of our journey towards fertility. And so I've seen firsthand what it can do to a marriage in terms of breaking down those walls of love and hope in a young marriage. And we were gratefully, we had, you know, strong married couples that we could rely on that would help us walk through that journey.
Yeah.
And I think as a church body, I think doing marriage ministry is so critical because there's so many, and a lot of times we think of it as terms of young marrieds, right? People who have been married 5 to 10 years or less, helping elevate them early on in their marriage. But gosh, now that I'm well beyond that stage, I'm starting to see a whole different side of marriage ministry. I'm starting to see the, hate to say this, but you're starting to get closer to that age where your kids are leaving the nest.
Yeah.
And for those married couples that maybe they've kind of walked away from the true intent of why they said their vows so many years ago, and they're now dealing with, what is our marriage going to be like now that the kids are gone? Like,
yeah.
Do I still like you?
Yeah,
like,
are
you still my friend? Yeah, like, I don't even know you anymore.
Right.
I've been on carpool duty for 18 years. I don't know who you are anymore.
Yeah.
And
I used to think you were cute. Yeah. Now you're annoying.
So I think that to me is just such a subject matter, whether it's the characters in this novel or just our lives as church members, just walking alongside each other. Because, man, this life is hard.
Yeah.
Marriage is hard. And it will test your resolve in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, I just appreciate, you know, this novel. And you know, you got stories of tragedy. And you've got stories of hope and a lot of... Well, I tell you what I was impressed by too, and I don't want to back up, but I was impressed by I could tell you researched, because you had, like, you were sharing information that somebody in that, like the FBI, like an FBI agent would share. Like, I mean, so I could tell you really did your research, and which just added to the book and added to what you hope to accomplish with this book. And so with that being said, let's say that one more time. What do you hope to see accomplished?
I hope that the reading audience will understand that when we're all broken in this world, and we all need to rely upon each other.
Yeah.
And when we do that, we'll find healing in that community.
Yeah.
But if we try to do these things alone, we will stay broken.
Mm.
And we won't be able to heal, and we'll grow further and more distant from God. And I think that's the true message that I'm hoping is conveyed through this novel.
Okay. When is the novel going to be released?
So, great question. As I had mentioned earlier, I was trying to go the route of traditional publishing, but I've already got novel 2, which is unrelated to this story.
Mm.
Can I
just say right quick that guys like you drive me crazy? So, I mean, I'm just going to be honest.
Well, but, hey, don't say it too much. I mean, I'm sitting here. I am a well enough aware individual that my mom's going to buy a book. One of my best buddies is going to buy a book, and then maybe somebody that doesn't like me just will buy it because they're curious of what I have to say. But there's probably going to be about 3 people that buy the book, is my honest assessment.
I got a check the other day from my publisher for $1.25.
Hey, man, brother, I'll take it right there, man. I'll take it. I just hope that, because I'm so passionate about writing, I'm ready to move on to story 2, I'm going to go the route of self-publishing.
Yeah.
And there's no better date to do this, which I'm so grateful that you allowed me to come on this podcast now, because my father passed away in 2021 on October 10th. And so to honor his memory and to... kind of give me a definitive timeline, I want to self-publish this on Amazon, Kindle, and Barnes & Noble with a release date of October 10th, 2024.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Amen. That's awesome, man. Well, I'm proud in a good way, and humbled maybe is a better word, to be your pastor. And I just want to encourage our listening audience. I mean, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to let you know ahead of time, okay? This book is raw for a reason, but the story that is told needs to be read. We need to know what's going on. And not only that, what a beautiful message in there for married couples as well. And so I want to encourage you to keep a lookout. Remind us of the title again.
Whispers Among the Blossoms, and you go to the website jacobmcdougall.com to learn more.
Awesome. Well, until we meet again, serve the King.